I want to tell you about a woman I know. Well, it's a woman I've heard about, actually. Some of the details are a mystery to me, but I know enough to tell you the story if you'll grant me some creative license. We'll call it a mostly true story. Okay. Her name is Tessa. It's short for something, but I'm not sure what. I heard maybe Elizabeth, or maybe Teresa, or maybe Letissa. All her friends call her Tessa, though, so we're going to call her that, too. Tessa, she's a kind soul. At her best, she's that kind of welcoming and hospitable person that so many of us wish we could be. She listens to your story and puts her hand on your arm and says, when you come in, she says, "What can I get you?" Sometimes she says, "What can I get you, honey?" She adds the honey. So sometimes you can see that flash of temper, a cloud pass over her expression. I've heard that she can just unload on you if you piss her off too much, or if she's already having a hard day and you get in her way, well, look out. But if you say to her, "Hey, Tessa, chill, it's okay," she will. She'll take a breath, and then she'll be that kind of person again. And sometimes she'll say, "Sorry, honey, hard day." When Tessa was young, she was bathed in the embrace of love. Loved tea parties and helping her dad in the kitchen. Never perfect, of course, but it was a happy childhood. And oh, she would cause trouble sometimes, but she always knew that she was loved. Like David, held, "Yes, I love you. I forgive what you've done, for I love you." And Tessa tried to do the same. Oh, once or twice she said what all 13-year-olds say, "I hate you." But she always took it back, and she forgave her family and friends for their mistakes and their errors, for she loved them too. But somewhere along the line, Tessa got really wounded, hurt. Something changed. One person told me it was a bad breakup, but I also heard that it was much worse than that. A robbery followed by an arson to cover their tracks, and some of her most precious things were destroyed or taken. Someone said, no, it was a mugging, and she got beat up, maybe worse than beat up. She was hurt, and badly, by a person she did not love, and maybe by a person that she didn't even know. After she heard that advice, "Forgive them, not for their sake," the advice giver was quick to add, "not for their sake, but for your own sake, so you can let go and move on." But Tessa couldn't do that. She knew how to forgive the people she loved for the mistakes they made, but she didn't know how to forgive people that she didn't love. So she built up this resentment in her heart. And she built a shell, a wall around her, saw demons lurking around every corner. Nobody blamed her. They understood, but they were sad for her. I should say, that's just one story that I heard, that she got hurt. Someone else told me, "Oh, no, that's not what happened at all. It was the other way around. She did the hurting." Years before, so they said, Tessa had lost her temper, and something bad had happened. Something really bad. Strong words, regretful words were spoken, that's for sure, everyone knows that, but maybe more, a shove, a fall, an injury, a heavy object thrown at someone, maybe. Again, the details here are unclear, but there was violence and pain. Some said that Tessa even did a little time for this, maybe a night in the city jail, one said, but maybe it was more. And maybe that's true. Maybe it wasn't Tessa who got hurt. Maybe it was Tessa who did the hurt. Or maybe it was both. Maybe it was both, and that's likely too, isn't it? I mean, isn't our experience that we have both things happen to us which hurt, and we do things to others which hurt them? So maybe it was both. Either way, that shell, that wall, got built. That's for sure. That happened. And Tessa found ways to ease her pain, alcohol perhaps, or something else. Maybe it was food somehow or cutting. I heard both, but I don't know for sure. The people who loved her grew more concerned, and they tried to talk to her and encourage her to get things together. They told her to forgive herself so that she could move on, stop carrying the guilt. But she had learned how to forgive others if she loved them. That's what she knew how to do. And at the moment, she didn't love herself enough to forgive herself. When people said, "Let down your guard," she just put another brick in the wall. Have you ever been there? Maybe not so bad as this, maybe worse than this. Unwilling to face your pain, unwilling to let go of it either. Feeling harder and crustier and not liking it, but not knowing what to do. Sometime into this part of her life, Tessa had a powerful dream. One of those dreams that seemed so vivid and clear that the memory of it was stronger than the memory of her own waking life. She was following a crowd of people on a dusty road, and the crowd came to a fancy house surrounded by gardens and olive trees and little fountains. Don't ask me how she knew they were olive trees, she just knew. And a few men at the front of the crowd went into the courtyard and they were welcomed into the house. And Tessa felt a compulsion. She had to get into the house. So she went through the garden and in the side door and through the kitchen, and there she found a dozen or more men sitting around. And there in front of her was the man who'd led the crowd, and she loved him. She loved him because he had told her, not just her, he had told the whole crowd, and she knew that, but it felt like just her. He had told her that she was loved by Elohim. She didn't know who that was. She was loved and forgiven, and all that had gone wrong, all the mistakes that she had made, and she didn't need to hold on to the pain. She was even forgiven for not forgiving others, even forgiven for her bitterness, even forgiven for her shame. So she loved him. And she saw him sitting there, supposedly the guest of honor, but she could see that his feet, dusty from the road, were still dirty, and his lips parched from the heat. And so she goes up to him, and she sits down on the floor, and she begins to weep. And she takes her hair and the water of her tears, gushing now in the dream, and she washes her feet. And then she wakes up, and she says to herself, "What the hell?" Tessa isn't a particularly religious person, and this dream is freaking her out. She puts it out of mind. "I didn't have that dream," she says to herself, but she has it again the next night, and a week later, and she can't shake it. She mentions it to a more religious friend of hers, trying to laugh it off. "This silly thing happened to me." And her friend says, "Oh, that's Luke chapter 7. So she goes home, and she pulls the old King James Bible from her grandfather off the shelf, and she searches through it until she finally finds Luke 7. And she reads it, and she finds verse 47. "Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little." Tessa reads it 5 times. And then she starts to weep in despair, for she doesn't love much. She loveth little. Her heart is hard, and she's forgotten how to love, and she weeps. She doesn't deserve forgiveness, she thinks. She can't forgive herself, can't ask others for forgiveness, and doesn't know how to give it to others. Surely doesn't know how, doesn't deserve, she thinks, to ask God for it, as if. Things get worse, not better. The gifts of her life go wasted, ungiven to the world. The gifts of the world offered unto her go unopened. She thinks, "I have not the gift of love. So my words are vain. My life is vain, sounding brass." Worse yet, she keeps having that dream, washing the feet, and every time she has it, it hurts even worse, as if she's being mocked by her subconscious. The spiral of shame only goes on spinning. She's sinking down. Oh, she gets through the day, holds down a job, barely, but you can see the sorrow in her eyes. One day, a fall day, almost winter, but not quite. Storms coming and going. Tessa runs into the same friend again. The one who said, oh, your dream's Luke 7. Her friend says, hey, have coffee with me. She reluctantly agrees. She's pretty silent. Her friend at some point asks, hey, did you ever figure out that dream you were having? And Tessa spills all. How unworthy she feels, how she can't give forgiveness or accept it because she doesn't have love. And her friend reaches out and takes her hands and looks into her eyes and says, Tessa, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Tessa. Was it an old Bible that you read? And Tessa answers, yes, it was my grandfather's. And her friend says, I'm sorry, I should have told you. That translation, that King James translation, is wrong. It's backwards. Here's how it really goes, directly from the Greek. Wherefore, I tell you, forgiven are her sins, the many, so she loves much. So she loves much. Her friend says, she loves because she is forgiven, not the other way around. The word, her friend says, is oti, the Greek word oti, and the King James makes it for. She is forgiven, for she loves. She is forgiven, therefore she loves. But it's really so. She is forgiven. Wait, I've got that backwards, don't I? Hence she loves. She is forgiven, hence she loves. Love is the response, not the requirement. Let me get that right, because I got it backwards. It's easy to get backwards. The King James makes it so. She is forgiven because she loves. But it's really the other way around. She is forgiven, therefore she loves. Hence. And it's like the earth quakes under Tessa's feet. Have you ever had that flash of insight, that moment when everything stands up and flips over and changes? That's what happened right there in front of, right there in the coffee shop. To Tessa, and it dawns on her. She doesn't have to deserve forgiveness. She doesn't have to be good enough to get it or to give it. The people who wronged her, she doesn't have to love them to forgive them. She doesn't have to love herself in order to forgive herself. She's not sure at all if she believes in God or Elohim or let alone in Christ, whatever that means, but her friend in the coffee shop, when they cry together, reassures her. Doesn't matter if you believe or not. You're forgiven and you're loved, and you don't have to be perfect for either to be the case. Her friend, you see, is a Christian universalist. She says, Tessa, look, you don't have to believe or whatever. I just want you to know that everyone is forgiven, everyone, because the God I believe in, God's love is infinite. You don't need to be saved from your sins. You need to be saved from your shame, because that is killing your spirit. And her friend takes out her phone and they look it up. She says, listen to the last verse of the chapter in the correct translation, in the New Revised. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. She says, look, the woman isn't saved from sin by her faith. That gift is offered to everyone. That's not what she's saved from. Her acceptance of the gift is the act of faith, and what she's saved from is despair, a life of regret and pain. That's what Jesus means when he says, go in peace, go in peace. Don't worry, let it go. Though you've broken your vows 1,000 times, come whoever you are. This is no caravan of despair. The circle of love is unbroken, and you're included no matter what. And they talk, and they hold hands, and pay for their coffee, and part with a hug. And walking away, Tessa feels what she feels like after an asthma attack. She's learned to breathe again. She starts small. Someone cuts her off in traffic and she forgives them quickly and without reservation. She's surprised she can do this, but she does it. She thinks to herself, they must be anxious. I hope they feel better soon. She starts to love them a little, wish for them peace anyway, which is as close as she can get at the moment. She keeps at it, wishes peace for those who do her wrong. She makes a mistake at work and she fixes it and takes more time than it should, but she fixes it and she forgives herself for it. I was distracted, she thinks to herself, and I fixed it. She doesn't beat herself up. She wishes for herself peace, and she feels like she could fly. Over time, she goes deeper. On the days that she believes in God, she loves God without condition, and she knows in her heart, in her bones, that God loves her without condition, but that's only on the days that she believes, which is not every day. Other days, she focuses on loving others by forgiving them, by letting go, by welcoming them into her life. This is when she starts to get known as a generous host. Her old friends are amazed and so happy for her. And she has many new friends who have no idea where she's been, what she's been through. She thinks on that. Just as they don't know her past, she doesn't know theirs. And so she's giving of the gift of love through the gift of forgiveness for their errors and troubles. And slowly but surely, she forgives herself. Lets go of her shame, and under it there is love. The embrace of love, though neither she nor anyone else is perfect, they can give and receive love. They can give and receive forgiveness. And she forgives those who have hurt her, not for their sake, and not for her own sake either, for the sake of love, which binds us together despite our wounding and our wounds. And so Tessa becomes the person that she is, and you'd like her. You really would. You might never know what she's been through, and maybe you'd see something there under it all, a grace easily given but hard to accept, now given out by her with joy. She breathes deeply the air around her. In the end, of course, she realized that the King James Version isn't totally wrong. It's mostly wrong, but there's a little truth there, too. One does need some love to forgive. The more you forgive, the more you love, but the more you love, the more you learn to forgive. You take folks as they are and are generous with them because you love them, not even necessarily individually, but as people themselves, as such. And you love them because you want them to love you and forgive them. And you want them to forgive you when you screw up. And you begin to see, on days that you might believe, how much even more infinite love would be infinitely forgiving. But mostly, it's about so she loves, not for she loves. Forgiveness is a gift. Whether we're on the giving end or the receiving end, it is a gift that we give that allows love to grow. It clears out the weeds so the flowers can come up. Forgiveness of ourselves, of others, is the gift that allows love to grow. It's the seed that becomes the flower. And the flower sends out more seeds of forgiveness, which grow, and you become this person who loves and forgives and washes feet. You become the person you want to be. Gift of love by gift of love, forgiving and life-giving, loving and including and lifting up. That's the story that I heard, anyway. Some of the details might be wrong. That's what I heard. Story I needed to hear, and maybe, just maybe, it's a story that you needed to hear, too. One more thing before I forget. When she was a kid, Tessa loved to sing. And she still does. Singing is good for the soul. She'd be the first to tell you. So let's sing together. It's number 18 in your gray hymnal. The words up here. I invite you to rise.